Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Roar Lions Roar. I'm your host tonight, Matt Filipovits, joined by my phenomenal co-host, Mr. Bill DeFilippo. Bill, hello, welcome in. How are you?
I'm doing all right, Matt. Nothing too crazy going on my end. How about yourself?
It's weird when you get that high of Selection Sunday last year of the Nittany Lions, like getting an at-large bid. And we're recording this a couple days early for a peek behind the curtain. Because we really wanted to get somewhat of an idea of, what our week was going to look like. So we thought we'd get ahead of it. But for Selection Sunday to kind of come and go without much fanfare for us was a stark reminder of what Penn State basketball has been for a lot of our lifetimes. But we are not here to talk Penn State basketball or March Madness. I'm sure there's a litany of podcasts you can listen to for that. We are here today to discuss Penn State's tight ends and offensive line as we head into the spring. If you haven't listened already, we did a quarterback preview, or not quarterback preview, but more or less a recap of 2023 and a look ahead to the spring for the quarterbacks, the running backs, and the wide receivers. Be sure to check those out on your podcast platform of choice. While you're there, leave us a 5-star review if you can, and be sure to follow us out there over on Twitter at RLRblog. Bill, anything else I should hit on at the top, or shall we just dive right in and talk about a Penn State tight end room that I was very, very pleased with last year?
Yeah, let's dive in, because I wasn't as pleased with them this year, last year, some for reasons that were their fault and some for reasons that were not.
Okay, totally fair, and I think I know where you're going to go with that. So last year, Penn State's tight end room consisted really of three guys, Theo Johnson and Tyler Warren. And Bill, I didn't realize how similar their stats were last year. Tyler Warren and Theo Johnson both registered 34 catches. They both scored 7 touchdowns. Warren led the way with 422 receiving yards, while Theo Johnson came in second with 341 receiving yards. Khalil Dinkins in there with 5 catches for 57 yards and surprisingly 2 touchdowns. I think both of them might have came on like fourth down too. So interesting development to watch towards the end of last season. And Bill, Theo Johnson had a really, really strong week at the combine. He had a really good pro day. In 2023, what did Theo Johnson do that surprised you? And what were your overall thoughts on his role in the offense as a whole? Because I was very underwhelmed by that specific part of the Theo Johnson experience last year, to no fault of his own, but it felt like the offense could not find a way to get him involved properly.
Yeah, I mean, that was part of the disappointment for last season. And again, I don't know how much of it is on Theo Johnson, because blocking has never been his thing. He showed a willingness to be a blocker in the running game, but you know, Johnson is legitimately one of the best athletes to ever come through at the tight end position. I believe that Real Athletics score, which is, I believe that's what it's called. It's a metric that basically takes everything that an athlete does at the NFL combine and kind of quantifies them. Johnson is the second most athletic tight end to ever enter the combine. Funny enough, the only guy ahead of him is former Penn State tight end, Zach Kuntz, who ended up transferring to Old Dominion. But Johnson at the combine came in at 6'6", 259 pounds, 10.25-inch hands, ran a 4.57 40, 1.5510 yard split, 39.5-inch vertical, 10'5" broad jump, 3-cone drill, 20-yard shuttle, all elite. It's ultra, ultra, ultra elite athleticism. And for whatever reason, Penn State didn't tap into that enough. He averaged 10 yards a reception, which that is the exact same amount as Liam Clifford did. That is less than Keandre Lambert-Smith, Tyler Warren, Nick Singleton, Dante Cephas, Trey Wallace, Amari Evans, more than Katron Allen, but less than Malik McClain, less than Trey Potts, less than Khalil Dinkins. He was basically used as a jumbo possession receiver. And again, for reasons that I don't really think are necessarily his fault, I think you have to use a guy like that in a way that takes advantage of what he can do athletically. he put up decent numbers, 34 receptions, 341 yards, tied for the team lead with 7 touchdowns. But it felt like some meat was left on that bone in his final year in Happy Valley.
I think this is going to be the thing, Bill, where we look back after like a year or two in the pros and we look at his stats, and folks who just don't follow the college game as closely are going to look at his stats and say, how did that guy not get more involved at Penn State in his senior season? That's what I'm saying. But I'm going to echo pretty much everything you just said. Theo Johnson is such a unique athlete, and for Penn State to go out there and have these receiver troubles, for Theo Johnson really not to become read number one or the primary option, especially as we got into like late October and November when it was clear no receiver was going to really become the alpha, I think it's just a gross mismanagement of coaching and a disservice to Theo, in all honesty, because when he did get the ball in his hands, he was great. He's sure-handed. He's a huge body. He runs well. He ran through contact. I thought blocking got a little bit better as the year progressed. I thought it started out really weak, especially, you know, in that T formation. As a whole, the tight ends weren't great at blocking this year. They really missed Strange. But I thought he was a guy who got better as the year went on. And I'm excited for what comes next for him. I think he's a guy who is really going to sneak into a higher draft pick than the production he posted would lead some to believe. So that's where I'm at with Theo Johnson in 2023.
Real quick on Theo. Mel Kiper, his most recent big board, doesn't have him listed in his top 25, has him as his number 4 overall tight end, probably a round 3 or 4, I'd say, something of that. But at the same time, like, you find the right team that puts that values traits, and maybe he goes a little bit higher than you might think.
I mean, Brenton Strange and Drew Scruggs went in the second last year. I don't think either of us saw that coming, so who knows. Theo Johnson, I think, can test really well there too. And Bill, I'm glad we're talking about drafts, because now it's time to talk about back for his fifth year, the first overall pick, my favorite player maybe on this Penn State roster, in Tyler Warren. Bill, I was really excited to see Tyler Warren grow up a lot. I was listening back to the podcast we had last year when we were previewing tight ends a couple days ago to prepare for this, and you made a lot of really great points back then about how Tyler Warren, for a lot of his career prior, was a gadget player. He'd never taken on enough snaps for us to really know what he would be as a like true tight end. And this year, I think he really did answer that bell. He dropped a lot more balls than I would feel comfortable with. I'm going to get that out of the way right off the bat. But when he did get the ball in his hands, and some of the catches he was able to make really showed some special traits. Again, 34 catches, 422 yards, 7 touchdowns. Those 422 yards were second on the team. I think Tyler Warren, as the primary option for Aller a lot of the time, because for some reason, Theo Johnson was the one who ran over the middle. Warren ran to the sideline into the flat a lot more often than Theo did. And I think he really thrived in that kind of role in 2023.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Warren is, like you mentioned, it was the drops. That was his big problem. He had flashes of being a really interesting and dangerous player in Penn State's offense. Again, 34 receptions, 422 yards, 12.4 yards per reception, which among everyone who recorded double-digit catches last year, Keandre Lambert-Smith, Tyler Warren, Theo Johnson, Nick Singleton, Dante Cephas, Trey Wallace, Liam Clifford, Catron Allen, that was second in yards per reception, just behind Lambert-Smith, who had 12.7 and 7 touchdowns. But he's an all right blocker. Again, he's one of those guys who I think gets after it as a blocker.
He's more willing than he is able, I think is the proper way to word that.
He's like Brett. You know, he's like earlier in his career, Brenton Strange, where you could see that he wanted to do it, just isn't always necessarily his thing. And then, like you mentioned, the drops were like a huge issue. And that wasn't something that was really put into context until I read a bit by Brandon Marcello of 24/7. Warren was one of the worst players in the country at pauling in receptions when, you know, he had a chance to catch them. I don't know what the exact number is, but quoting Marcello, Warren ranking near the nation's bottom at 10.2%. So basically, one
drops,
in every
10.2% of his catchable balls were drops.
Yeah, so one in every 10 times that Drew Aller tried throwing the football to him, he ended up dropping it. I don't know how many targets he had specifically, but let's just for argument's sake say that he had 70 targets on the year. And if he dropped one in 10, that's another seven balls that he could have potentially reeled in. 34, 35, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That would be 41 receptions somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, probably another around 550 yards. Like that completely changes elements of Penn State's offense. If they didn't have to worry as much, that Tyler Warren wouldn't be able to reel in passes. And worth mentioning that he also had, you know, showed a little bit of big play threat ability in that he had Penn State's longest play from scrimmage last year with a 75-yard touchdown, which is, you know, a very fortunate touchdown, but a 75-yard touchdown nonetheless.
Wasn't that a tip ball?
So it some nonsense happened. I blacked out a lot of parts of the bowl game. But again, to get to Warren's year, it was a year where he did take that step from being a gadget player, a guy who was involved in more gadgety plays, to someone they could someone they went to a little bit more often. And he just has to build on that by going from, okay, I'm playing more and I'm more involved, to now I'm a guy they actually can rely on.
One thing I'm curious about, Bill, is I don't know the number offhand, but if he scores in the next whiteout, I have to imagine he would be the first player to ever score in four whiteouts. Because he scored in 2021 against Auburn. 2023, this past year, he scored twice. The whiteout back in 2022 was Minnesota. He scored in that game. Yeah, I've got to imagine he's got to be pretty close to that record. So that's a cool little stat. Shout out to whiteout Warren.
We'll put someone from our ACE research department on that one.
And Bill, we'll round things off here with Khalil Dinkins, who really existed primarily to be the lead blocker in the T formation and to check in every once in a while and to give Aller another really nice target. Again, five catches last year, two of them were touchdowns. For a guy who, I don't know about you, Bill, I thought he was going to be pushed out of that role by Andrew Rapoport coming in. But for Khalil Dinkins to hold on to that role and deliver was a promising sign. With that being said, he wasn't a good enough lead blocker in that, or not nearly as good as Brenton Strange as the middle guy in that T formation. And I think that hurt Penn State a lot. I think it led them to having to do a lot more quarterback sneaks, which are fine. Those had a resurgence since Jalen Hurts invented a way just to line up off sides and fall forward. But I think Khalil Dinkins in 2023 had a much better year and a much bigger role than I expected.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I'm going through this right now. His reception against Iowa, five on the year, his reception against Iowa was a touchdown reception that went for 9 yards, and it was on fourth down. His reception against Indiana was a touchdown reception that went for 9 yards, and it was on fourth down. His reception against Maryland, the game, you know, the game was basically out of hand at that point in the third quarter. Still, he hauled that catch in on fourth down. I'm not sure. I'm going to try and do this really quickly. Michigan State, he ended up catching that one on a first down on what ended up being Penn State's second scoring drive of the game. And then against Ole Miss, his reception on that one was on a third and four when it was 13-10 Ole Miss, and it was actually right before Aller threw his one interception in that game. So five receptions on the year, two of them went for touchdowns, three of them were on third downs, one a fourth down, one was on a third down. It's very interesting to me that Penn State tried to get, most frequently got him the football in situations where they were very important, but he was on the field, but also strategically, the other team is not going to be looking for him. So interesting thing for that probably shows a bit more trust in him than you might think. Like you mentioned, he was relegated to that blocker in the T formation role and, you know, just didn't quite work for him as well as it did for Brent Strange. But some things that they could build on, which is all you could really ask for with a guy that young.
So with Theo Johnson off to the NFL and with Tyler Warren, Khalil Dinkins, and a group of guys back, Penn State's tight end depth is in a really strong place heading into the spring. And before we go into those individual guys and talk about what success looks like, I sent something, Bill, in our Slack a couple days ago. And this comes from our good friend Parker Fleming. That's Stats O War on Twitter. He does great college football statistics, puts out really like easy to digest data. And I always appreciate his content. But he went out there and he put out this tweet, and it's offensive plays with more than two tight ends on the field in 2023. Penn State ran 53 plays with at least three tight ends on the field. Kansas, where Andy Kotelnicki was last year, ran 54 plays with at least three tight ends on the field. Frankly, I didn't know Kansas was about that action. I didn't know they had tight end depth to do that. But I'll tell you one thing. I think Penn State's tight end room has the ability to go out there and get even more reps in that kind of formation, especially now knowing that Andy Kotelnicki is comfortable running that many guys out there in that kind of personnel. Bill, what's your stance on that? Are we going to see, the T formation is a whole other conversation, because does that go away with Mike Yurcich? But what does this tight end room as a whole look like in 2024? What can it, with knowing this kind of ability to go to that in your bag of tricks is with Kotelnicki?
This is a really bad answer, but a lot of it's going to depend on the wide receiver room. You need to play to the strengths of your football team, whatever that looks like. And you have to play to the strengths of your personnel. And James Franklin, I think, has hinted that that is a reason why Mike Yurcich is no longer around as Penn State's offense coordinator. I think I think something that he said was something that Yurcich was, really, really loved 11 personnel. And that didn't quite fit what Penn State wanted. And I think it's not a coincidence that a word that Andy Kotelnicki has used over and over ever since he became Penn State's offensive coordinator has used throughout the course of his career, and was a word that James Franklin used when he first got hired at Penn State, was he wants his offense to be multiple. And in the context of Penn State's tight end room, and in the context of what Kansas did last year, Kansas, their top tight end, 27 receptions, 451 yards, three touchdowns. That was also fourth on the team in receptions, in yards, and third in receiving touchdowns. Their next couple of tight ends had 9 receptions and 6 receptions. I would imagine that a big reason that Kansas had had so much of their had three guys in the field so much was because they ran the ball a ton, and you just get those extra blockers in. Kansas was 12th nationally,
and they had a backup quarterback for a lot of the year.
And Kansas was 12th nationally in terms of percentage of plays that were run plays all the year at 60.61%. Penn State was 53rd at 53.4%. So I think that it's all going in terms of extra blockers. In terms of using them as extra blockers, it's something that I think we'll come to in a few minutes when we talk about the offensive line. Andy Kotelnicki, big believer in an outside zone running game. You're going to want to have more bodies on the edge that can block. Penn State doesn't have that in any of the guys that they have in their tight end room. How does that impact?
Yeah, not in tight end room. Maybe as an extra offensive lineman, we'll see.
Yeah. How do you use that in the running game? If Penn State's wide receiver room has taken a step forward and you're not as dependent on throwing a ball to a tight end, do you only put one tight end out there so you can have that extra body at wide receiver? So I don't know how much I'm going to read into Kansas having three tight ends on the field that much last year. I mean, the year before, Kansas was 58th in terms of percentage of running plays at 53.21%. I don't know what their number of tight ends on the field would have been or how frequently they used those multi-tight end sets a year ago, but you need to have extra bodies out there. You find ways to get them. You need to have an extra tight end on the field. You find a way to get that on the field, even if it costs you, say, a wide receiver. If you have the talent at wide receiver, you take a tight end off the field or you put another running back in, whatever it might be. I think there's probably a lot that goes into this that are kind of outside of the control of the guys in the tight end room.
So, Bill, with that tight end room, it's springtime now. There's a lot of depth there. Ty Howell has been ingrained in that room for, I want to say this is going to be his fourth year, 2021, two, three, four. Yeah, so the Letterman's now been here for pretty much an entire cycle of guys, which is crazy to think about. Mm-hmm. Bill, we'll go one by one here because I think that it makes more sense for a room that's relatively small compared to like receiver or offensive line. For me, success this spring for Tyler Warren is stay healthy and really separate yourself as the true number one. What's it look like for you for Tyler Warren?
Yeah, it's stay healthy. I think there's enough talent in the tight end room that if someone were to take the job from him, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. Like, it would mean someone has cleared a very high bar, so wouldn't complain about that. But for the most part, it's just stay healthy. Like, there's not a ton that I think – and, you know, with how much Warren's been in the program, find his voice as a leader, be elected a team captain, do that kind of stuff. I'm not as worried about potential on-field production from Tyler Warren other than get with the jugs machine and figure out how to catch a football a little more frequently.
That's a big one. Khalil Dinkins, for me, it's build upon what was a lot of promise. I really was impressed with what he was able to do last year. You rattled off all those stats about how productive he was in late down situations. For Khalil Dinkins, it's get a grip on the number two and find out how to block better. Really ingrain yourself with that offensive line group and find a way to add a ton of value as a blocker. He is a big, he's 6'4", 246. He's one of the bigger guys in that room, and he's going to get bigger as time goes on. He's settling into that role, and if that role in the short term is still going to be that primary blocking tight end, then he's got to bulk up and he's got to prove he can really grow as a blocker after what we saw last year.
Yeah, and I think more than Warren, you know, Warren is kind of like the set the standard guy in the room. I'd say Khalil Dinkins is the guy who's setting the bar in the room. And if you are...
Ooh, that's a great way to word it.
And if you are clearing wherever he sets that bar, that means you are good enough to get on the football. You're good enough right now, and they're able to find a role for you to get onto the football field. If you're not able to clear that bar, okay, maybe you're the third tight end, fourth tight end, whatever that might be. So for Dinkins, I think it's all about figuring out where he's going to be setting that bar.
The number three tight end, though, I think it's fair to call it a race between two guys specifically. Andrew Rapoyer, a redshirt freshman, and Luke Reynolds, true freshman early enrollee, five-star prospect, the only five-star tight end in that 2024 recruiting class, and a converted quarterback who has shown a ton of athletic ability, but still has to learn the position to be ready to play in the Big Ten. Bill, who do you give the leg up to right now? Oh. Are you like me, and that is Andrew Rapoyer, simply because he's been there longer?
Yeah, no, it's that he's been there longer, and then coming out of high school, the rub on Rapoyer was that he's good enough. You know, he's not far away from contributing, and while Reynolds might be the higher ceiling guy, he has a little bit more work. I mean, Reynolds is 228 pounds in the most recent roster. And it's worth remembering, while, yes, Reynolds was a five-star prospect, Rapoyer was the number 127 prospect in the country, according to 24/7's Compositor. He was a very, very good tight end recruit. And then even elsewhere in the room, Joey Schlafer is a guy who, you know, he wasn't as decorated a recruit, but he's a good football player from Pennsylvania, came in the same class as Rapoyer. I think it was a three-star he was a three-star recruit.
Michael Bennett's half-brother
Jerry Cross, guy who has been around the program for a long time. We'll see what ends up becoming for him. You expect guys who've been around for as long as he has, who haven't gotten a chance to contribute yet, maybe they're the kind of guy who ends up hitting the portal, but we'll end up seeing with him. But I actually think Reynolds is probably a bit farther down the food chain than competing with Rapoyer for the third tight end. I would say going into this year, it's more likely, based on absolutely nothing than a gut feeling, that Rapoyer becomes the second tight end than it is that Reynolds becomes the third one.
Okay. All right. I could see that happening. Yeah, I don't want to discount anybody in that room, but I just think with Reynolds getting in early, that's huge. I think Rapoyer is going to be the third tight end. He went to prep school out of high school, so he's a little bit older than a guy for his quote-unquote grade level. You know, there's, and that comes with just a level of physical maturity that you cannot force. Like, that has to come on its own. Mm-hmm. Joey Schlaefer, a big-time receiver. Same thing with Jerry Cross. They just have to keep getting bigger and keep learning how to play tight end. Cross was a receiver in high school. Schlaefer set all kinds of, I think in Berks County, all kinds of receiving records. That's their bread and butter. They need to get every other part of being a tight end down, I think, before they're ready to contribute. And Bill, if you want to contribute awesome items to your wardrobe, who would you go to?
You know, I'm usually someone who just buys the package of Hanes beefy tees from Walmart. Do you have a better idea?
I would recommend our friends over at Home Field Apparel. Home Field Apparel makes some of the best collegiate apparel out there in the marketplace today. Bill, I see you rocking a hat. I know that out there they also have t-shirts, crew necks, hoodies, joggers. I see they're coming out with bomber jackets. There's a Penn State bomber jacket out there somewhere in the ether, and they really do take the time to learn the history behind your school, the logos they use, and they honestly are some of the most comfortable pieces of clothing I own. I was buying them before they even decided to sponsor this podcast, and I will continue to do so because they have been great partners to us. And our listeners can get 15% off their first order with promo code RLR23. Again, that's promo code RLR23 for 15% off your first order. Thank you to Homefield for sponsoring this podcast. And Bill, was last year the year that the Penn State offensive line took the most noticeable jump?
It was pretty good the year before. So I will say no, just because I think that in terms of the biggest jump, that 2022 line, with Olufashinu, with Hunter Norzad, with Juice Scruggs, with Sal Wormley, you know, Landon Tangwall is in there. Caden Wallace, right tackle. I mean, for how good it was, you know, it was a good offensive line last year. It didn't have anything as dominant and jaw-dropping as that performance that the 2022 line had against Auburn. And that was coming off the heels of an offensive line that we didn't feel especially great about in 2021. So I would say in terms of the biggest jump, it would have been the 2022 line, but they were able to stay pretty solid from one year to the next, which is just something we haven't seen out of a James Franklin offense, an offensive line during James Franklin's time at Penn State before then.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I mean, maybe I got a little bit hyperbolic there, but yeah, they really did keep the standard that I think they set for themselves back in 2022. And for people who were calling for Phil Troutwine's job after 2021, they were proven wrong. And we always said it was going to take time for a guy like Phil Troutwine to get his guys in that room. So, Bill, last year, we'll talk about the guys who have since gone and are going to be, I think all three of them are going to have their names called in the NFL draft in a couple weeks. Olufashinu, I think unquestionably a top 15 pick. Hunter Norzad, a guy who I think is really helping his cause with a strong pre-draft process. I know he got hurt, but the tape he put out there at the Senior Bowl and people going back and watching his tape, I think is really going to shoot him up draft boards. And then Caden Wallace, who I think played his best football these last 2 years. And as a four-year starter at offensive tackle at a school like Penn State, you clearly had a lot of talent, but I think we really saw him put it all together. Bill, who from that group do you think really helped their case for the next level most in 2023?
Helped their case the most. I'd probably say Hunter Norzad.
Agreed.
All of them, just because obviously Olu was always going to be a top 10, 15 ish pick. Caden Wallace, I'm going through right now, and Mel Kiper doesn't even have him listed as one of his top 24 offensive tackles. Still a guy who I think will, whether it's get drafted or be a priority undrafted free agent, have something to say in the NFL going forward. And then Norzad, or this is Mel Kiper, this is just ESPN's best available. And then Norzad was a guard, a nice guard, a guy who made the transition to FBS last year. This past year had a really good season. Now he's ESPN's number five center, where this is a weird draft where the top three or four guys are all very, very good prospects, and then it does fall off a bit. But Norzad is very highly regarded, number 114 overall player ranked for ESPN. So I definitely say Norzad. The way he transitioned has been quite impressive.
And I think Olu really, really came on strong. And I think, you know, did he take a little bit of a step back from what he was in 2022? I think it's really hard to say. I'm seeing that take out there. Olu only played in, like, what, Bill, 8 games in 2022? So he had 9 starts under his belt in his career. I think we saw Olu grow up a lot last year, in the sense that he clearly understood that he was going to make a lot of money in the NFL. And I think he really handled his business in a professional manner and got the job done, I think, for Penn State on the left side of the offensive line more often than not. Same thing with Caden Wallace. I think Caden Wallace really won that right tackle job early and then made it his number one priority to never let it go and get as much good tape out there as he could.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with Olu is that he really did burst onto the scene in the 2000 ahead of the 2023 NFL draft. And let me just jog my memory really quick. Yeah, the first offensive tackle that was picked was Paris Johnson out of Ohio State, who six to the Cardinals, and he was a good prospect, but he wasn't someone who anyone thought was like blue chip, can't miss. Next offensive tackle, Darnell Wright from Tennessee, went to the Chicago Bears. I believe he's a right tackle.
He is. Go Bears.
Yeah, right tackle for them. Again, a nice prospect, but not someone who anyone thought is a big-time blue-chip guy. Then the one who was viewed as kind of the best tackle prospect, Peter Skoronski from Northwestern, no one thought he was going to be a tackle, or a few people thought he was going to be a tackle full time, thought he was going to have to move to guard. He ended up moving to guard for the Titans. So there was a lot of hype on not a very large sample size that Olu could have been the best, the first guy off the board, the top offensive lineman taken in the 2023 draft. And that's a very, having those kind of expectations when you come back to school isn't always the easiest thing, especially when you're someone like him who, like you mentioned, Matt, didn't play a ton of football in his first year in Happy Valley, or his first year as a starter in Happy Valley due to injury. So for him to have been able to come out and still been a rock on that left side, still has to get a little bit nastier in the running game, but is as good of a pass protector as you're going to find in college football and in making that jump to the NFL. You know, he deserves – It's very easy to sit here after he was hyped up as a first-round pick after the 2023 season and then came back and is still hyped up as a first-round pick. But he does deserve a lot of credit, I think, for not letting that get to his head and letting that negatively impact him and, you know, kind of give himself permission to coast through this season because he knows that about himself.
So we'll talk about 4 more guys here, Bill, and we'll call them the 4 other co-starters of really what was a 7-man group for most of the season for Penn State last year. Mm-hmm. J.B. Nelson started at left guard an awful lot, randomly went down against Northwestern, and never really looked the same. Vega Ioane got a lot of run in that absence as a redshirt freshman. Big guy, showed a lot of good, showed a lot of not so good. I think he's going to be somewhere in between moving forward. Sal Warmly at right guard opted to run it back for a 6th season of college football. I think the fact that Sal Warmly is so little talked about says all we need to know about how good he is as a right guard. You don't really want to talk about your right guard very often. Mm-hmm. And Sal Warmly does a very good job of doing his job. And then Drew Shelton, who played a lot with Olu on somewhat of a pitch count for a lot of the year, struggled, I think, mightily in the bowl game. Since then, we've learned he suffered an injury and has had off-season surgery. But Bill, what those 4, you can take it however you want to take it. What of that group, what did you like in 2023? What didn't you like? What was your stance on the 4, quote-unquote, co-starters from last year who are going to be running it back this year?
I would say the guy I would focus on here is probably, who would it be? It's tough because they all kind of generally did their jobs and were solid, reliable options. And I think it's worth remembering that guys went like Penn State didn't go into last year thinking JB Nelson was going to be their left guard. Penn State went into last year or JB Nelson or Vega Ioane was going to be their left guard. Penn State went into last year thinking that Landon Tangwall was going to be their left guard. In like, when was it, Matt?
It was during camp. He got dinged up during camp. So they went into, August, assuming that Landon Tangwall was going to take that job.
August 30th, he announced his retirement from football. August 30th, they started their season not terribly long after that. And yet they were able to kind of adjust on the fly. Nelson, Ioane, Wormley, and I'm sorry, who was the fourth guy you said?
Drew Shelton.
And then Shelton obviously gets a little bit of run. He's kind of the he's the guy who comes in when they decide, all right, Olu, we're going to take you out of the game. It's out of, we don't have to worry about them getting too terribly much closer in this. I think that the fact that we weren't singling out any one of them for not being good enough, for being a huge liability, for all these sorts of things, that's huge. Like, it's the fact that we were able to kind of take for granted Penn State's offensive line play last year, and we didn't have to worry about it in the slightest, is with some exceptions. Like, it was always telling. It was telling to me how much on like fourth and one, on third and one, third and two, they really seemed to like literally anything that was just plow forward. So maybe that's something worth watching. But for the most part, like, JB Nelson was a reliable option. Salim Wormley was a reliable option. Vega Ioane, when he's able to drive through a guy, is, a really, really impressive football player. And then Drew Shelton is
an unstoppable force at that size. Yeah.
And Drew Shelton is a guy who they brought along slowly, and they're probably on the heels of an injury, probably going to have to keep bringing him along slowly. So, yeah, like, boring consistency is like the thing you want out of your offensive line. Unless it's going to be like Michigan, where your entire offensive line is like 23-year-olds who could just manhandle people. So you kind of got exactly what you want out of an offensive line last year from Penn State. And again, that's a new thing for us. That is something that we haven't gotten all that frequently in the James Franklin era.
So Penn State's offensive line last year, and this is the last thing I'll mention before we bury 2023 for the offense as a whole, they allowed 16 sacks last year. That's really good.
Mm-hmm.
That was second in the Big Ten behind only Rutgers. And if you remember, Rutgers really liked to run the football last year. They weren't throwing it a ton. New offensive coordinator Andy Kotelnicki and Kansas and that offense only allowed 13 sacks last year. So a lot to like in terms of what Penn State has, what the new offensive staff knows how to do. So, Bill, we can kind of break this down how we want to, and we can do it by I think we should do it by projected tackles, projected guards, and projected centers. So I'll kick things off here. And I'll give a starting five. Like, I'm more than happy to do that. Who I think is going to be the starters for Penn State in 2024. At tackle, I think left tackle is going to be Drew Shelton. And I think right tackle, I don't want to cop out right away, so I'm going to give it to Nolan Rucci, with Anthony Donko playing a ton in there as well. At the guards, left guard, I'm going to go with JB Nelson. Right guard, I'm going to go with Sal. And then in the center, I know Cooper Cousins is getting a lot of hype, but a year five guy, a guy who I expect to be voted a captain, and also a Lehigh Valley native, in Nick Dawkins at center. Okay. That's my five.
Yeah.
Bill, that five, every single one of them is at least in their third year of college football. One of those guys is a sixth year. Two of those guys are fifth year. One of those guys is a fourth year. That is an old offensive line. And having an old line is a very new problem for Penn State.
Yeah. My line is would probably be the same. I might go with Anthony Donko over Donko. Nolan Rucci, just based on the fact that Donko has that extra year in the program. And he's he's been a little farther along physically. Ruchi's at 6'8", 305. I think Franklin said he's up to about 315 pounds. Donko's 6'5", 328. You know, real big body that Penn State could have on the right side of its offensive line. He impressed in the bowl game against Ole Miss. And as you look at how Penn State's schedule starts, that trip to West Virginia at the start of the season, and then Bowling Green, bye week, Kent State, Illinois, UCLA, all at home. Penn State has the luxury of not needing to know exactly how a couple of these battles are going to shape out. I mean, I suppose there's a possibility J.B. Nelson kicks out to left tackle, Vega Ioane's at left guard, and then it's Nick Dawkins, Sal Wormley, and then a right tackle. Maybe Cooper Cousins, maybe the fact that he's already this close tells us that the inevitable is that he takes over the center job, even though I would give the edge to Nick Dawkins based off the fact, like you said, he's been around forever. By all accounts, he's a really, really good leader, a guy everyone on the team loves, someone who I think having someone who just has it between the ears and kind of knows what's happening in college football, even with Drew having that year quarterback under his belt, having that's an asset. But there's a lot of different things that Penn State can kind of do here, and they don't need to have the offensive line that starts against West Virginia and the offensive line that starts in what would theoretically be their next really big game when they travel to USC on October 12th. It could have, you know, it could go from Shelton, Nelson, Dawkins, Wormley, Ruchi to Nelson, Ioane, Cousins, Wormley, Donko very easily. So they have time. They have time to figure this all out, and I think that's a really exciting thing.
They have time and they have the ability. Like, they have the depth to really take the time to figure it out. That's such a luxury. And Bill, there's like 14 scholarship guys in that room right now. Same thing we did with wide receiver. I don't want to go through and give everybody, you know, that little 3-minute audio clip, because frankly, there's not enough time for us to pull that off for everybody here. So we'll start with the tackles, and I'm just going to run down tackles and give what I think their goal is. If there's some guy you want to talk about more, interrupt me and we'll go from there. So I think the lead guy in this pack, Drew Shelton, out for spring. Get healthy, learn the playbook. We'll move on from there. Mm-hmm. Anything there?
No, that's it.
Next oldest guy in that room, crazy enough, is Nolan Ruchi. The only, you know, class of 2021 offensive lineman from Penn State, with Nate Bruce and Landon Tangwall now off the roster. Nolan Ruchi, Bill, the Wisconsin transfer. Success for me for him. Prove you can play right tackle. Prove you can start at right tackle. And then prove to me you can be an emergency break glass option at left tackle in the event that, you know, Shelton goes out, J.B. Nelson has to swing out and he goes out. Like, just prove to me you can play. Where are you with Ruchi?
I mean, it's probably telling that the perception of Wisconsin is that they have this like big indomitable offensive line, and that hasn't really been the case. And in all of that, Nolan Ruchi has never fully been able to break through. So can he continue to bulk up? Because James Franklin, I don't think it's a coincidence, he says over and over, bulking up is the important thing for him. Can he continue to bulk up? And if he can continue to bulk up, can he get his body to a place where he can then compete physically at a tackle spot? Like, that has to be the number one priority for him. And that has to be the number one priority for him. And from there, you know, just kind of see what happens.
Anthony Donko, for me, success. Take what you showed might rightfully be yours in that starting right tackle spot. My big concern with him is that he spent a lot of the year at guard. I do wonder if it was just like a flash in the pan for right tackle. And that's not a knock on the kid. I just need to see more of it. For forever, we've thought Donko was a guard. So for me, it's locked down what I think you probably earned based upon your bowl performance. What's Donko's success look like to you?
Can you prove easy enough? Can you prove your bowl performance wasn't just a flash in the pan? And if he could do that, like, for everything I just said about Nolan Ruchi, if he could show that, it's his job. Like, he is going to be Penn State's starting right tackle.
For Javon Williams, it's take advantage of the extra reps. With Shelton out, a lot of left tackle reps are up for grabs. Those should go to Javon Williams, and I expect those defensive ends to make his life very, very hard for the next couple of weeks, and I hope he takes advantage of it. Bill, that's you.
Yeah, I watched you there for a sec. But yeah, with Javon Williams, like you said, can he we'll see what ends up happening with JB Nelson if he ends up getting a lot of reps at left tackle as a result of this. But, you know, there's going to be more stuff there for Williams to take advantage of. If he could do that, that's huge. It would be huge if he is able to be a five-star who can lock down a left tackle spot at Penn State.
Chim Diono, keep developing. Just keep getting better. There's no rush to get a guy like Chim Di on the field anytime soon. Get your reps up, and hopefully we can see you have some kind of a role in blowouts in 2024.
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, let's see where he is physically. 6'5", 323 pounds, really good physical profile. But like you mentioned, probably not a guy they're going to have to rush, which is fine. Like, it's fine.
He was always going to be a guy that took time.
Yeah. So continue to take time and don't do anything that makes it so when your number might get called, whether that is in 2025 or whether that is in blowouts in 2024, they're going, you know, we're not going to go with Chim Di. We're going to give someone else these reps.
Garrett Sexton, early enrollee. He is also out for the spring. Get healthy, young man. And then Egan Boyer. Just hold your own and enjoy English 15.
Yeah, if a situation pops up where Egan Boyer plays snaps for Penn State this season, it's probably not a good thing. He's listed on the roster at 6'8", 251 pounds. The next lightest offensive lineman that Penn State has, let's see, there's a walk-on who's 285. There is another walk-on who is 256. So don't enjoy English 15 unless you have a ham sandwich with you, son.
We'll move to guards. Bill, for Sal Warmly, nothing he can do this spring is a success for me outside of just stay healthy.
Stay healthy. Stay healthy. Yep.
JB Nelson, same thing. Stay healthy. Yep. I think you're a great guard. If you have to cross-train a tackle, great in a pinch. But really focus on becoming a dominant guard.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Golden Israel Achumba, it's going to be year five for him. Keep bringing depth. You know, keep being a great depth piece. Keep giving good looks.
And he's the guy who's really good at singing, right?
He is. Yeah, he's the one who sings like the national anthem.
Yeah, he's very good at that. So keep being good at that.
Vega. Bill, Vega's intriguing to me.
Yeah, he's a guy who they clearly like. And who they clearly trust to one extent or another. He just still needs that little bit of polish. Don't think he'll move to center at all. Maybe he gets a couple snaps there just to kind of see what that looks like. But he's a guy who's still big and mean. And big and mean and nasty and pushes people around. And can you refine that and go from the guy who's big and mean and nasty to a guy who is able to kind of harness that and be a more well-rounded offensive lineman?
For me, Vega's success this year is prove your versatility and push for a starting gig from one of those two guys. I don't think he's going to get it over a sixth and fifth year player, but if he can push and raise the floor of that three-man guard rotation, they're in a pretty good spot.
Agree.
So that's what Vega is for me.
Agree.
Alex Birchmeier, early enrollee last year, didn't appear in any games, a very highly touted prospect. It takes time with some guys. I think Birch might be a guy who just has to be ready for a room that's going to be probably losing Sal Warmly and JB Nelson after next year. So for Birch, it's be ready to compete in year three and do everything in your power to start getting ready for that.
Yeah, it's the Chim Diono situation, where just make it so if you get an opportunity to get onto the field for any reason, you're a guy that they're going to turn to over somebody else.
And Bill, we'll close it out with centers. I think Vega's going to play center too. I think he'll rep there for sure. But there's two guys here, I think, for sure. Nick Dawkins. Success for me, Nick Dawkins. set the tone from a leadership perspective in that room. I think he is a guy who is so well-respected in that offensive line room. He's been around since the COVID year. He's been through it all. He's been through losing seasons. He's been through Rose Bowl wins. I think he's a guy who has to really establish himself as the voice of the Penn State football team. And with that, win the starting center job in spring ball.
So,
what's it look like for you?
I'm going to take a slightly different approach here, and I'm basically going to say that success for Nick Dawkins, and I'm going to take both Nick Dawkins and Cooper Cousins here. Success for Nick Dawkins is outright winning the job. Success for Cooper Cousins is it's still a competition going into the summer. Because if Nick Dawkins outright wins the job, great, that means it's his. If they still have questions, or Cooper Cousins is still making them ask questions going into the summer, you know, I'm going to pull a Nick and I'm going to tell a story about the Seattle Seahawks. After the Seahawks drafted Russell Wilson, it was presumed that he was going to be the backup to Matt Flynn, who I think they had just brought in on a big money contract. And Nick, if I'm getting any of the details wrong as you're listening to this and it's making you mad, I hope that's what's happening. But I'm pretty sure
Nick's not listening.
Yes, he is. He's got diapers to change. While that was happening, they went in with the plan of Matt Flynn, the guy who's been who has NFL experience or just gave money to, versus Russell Wilson, the brand new guy. And one thing that Pete Carroll had a very famous line about this, it was Matt didn't lose the starting job, Russell won it. And if we go into the summer and there is still an opportunity for Cooper Cousins to win the starting job, I think that's probably reflecting really good on him, because Nick Dawkins is the kind of guy that if someone is going to be a first-time starter at a position that's important at center, you want that guy to look like Nick Dawkins. Physically, mentally, from a leadership perspective, from what he does on and off the field, all these sorts of things. But if Cooper Cousins is good enough that it's still a question, that's a really good thing for Cooper Cousins. So Dawkins in the spring, it's about shutting that door. Cooper Cousins in the spring, it's about keeping it open.
That's a great way to end this podcast, Bill. I can't think of a better way to define success for both of that guys, or for both of those guys. So well done, Bill. That's a very talented offensive line room and a very, very talented tight end room. And both of those things can make a quarterback's life a lot easier. And that's what we're all chasing from the Penn State offense in 2024, to make things as easy and smooth for Drew Aller, for Bo Prabula, for Andy Kotelnicki, for James Franklin as possible. Bill, anything else you want to talk about before we send our listeners off into the rest of their week?
Nothing that I could think of. You know, we're doing this as the women's bracket came out and the Lady Lions ended up not getting selected for the NCAA tournament. We'll have to see if they decide to do the women's NIT, but just want to give them a quick shout out off a really good
great
season,
year.
19-12 on the year, 9-9 in conference play. They were excellent at the BJC, you know, put a nearly took down USC in the Bahamas, ultimately just couldn't quite get there. But after, you know, after a couple of tough years to start under Carolyn Keeger, their head coach, they've been moving very much in the right direction. It's you know, men's team missed out on the tournament, going to miss out on the NIT. It does still seem like we're going to have postseason basketball. Hopefully seem like we're going to have postseason basketball in Happy Valley. So that's a great thing.
Bill, that's a great way to end it. And thank you so much to our listeners for listening to this edition of Roar Lions Roar. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice if you are able. Be sure to follow us out there on Twitter over at RLR Blog with Pro Day kind of in the rearview mirror now. The big thing we're looking forward to, of course, is, you know, more spring ball nuggets. But as the NFL draft season really starts to ramp up, I'm excited to see as those projections start to roll in. Free agency came, and it's really been busy for Penn State guys. Saquon Barkley to the Eagles, of course. I know a lot of folks are going to be excited about that. The bigger deal no one's talking about is that Ryan Bates signed with the only morally good franchise in professional sports, the Chicago Bears. Bill, I am going to end it here before I say anything else that's going to make NFL fans mad. So thank you so much for joining me, Bill. For my co-host, Bill DeFilippo, I'm Matt Flipovitz. Take care, everyone, and go State.